This brings us to step one. We admitted that we were powerless over alcohol, drugs, our acting out behavior, that our lives have become unmanageable. Now, the question is on step one is, what does it mean to be powerless? What does it mean to be unmanageable? How do you know I'm powerless? How do I know you're powerless, or your life is unmanageable, or my life is unmanageable? So there's a process in the rooms when we're sharing our stories of what we were like and what happened and what we're like today, that there's an identification that takes place. Now, behavior patterns vary a lot within an addiction. Now, I'm an intravenous cocaine user. I like the needle. So if I'm working with a marijuana addict and I start sharing how I use needles, is the marijuana addict going to understand anything or identify with me? They're going to look at me like I got three heads on. You know, so how do I identify, even though my behavior patterns vary from another's? And if you ever work outside your own addiction, like I'm an alcoholic drug addict, but I've worked successfully with codependents and cutters and hoarders and gamblers and sex addicts and love addicts and food addicts. How can I identify when I don't even share that particular pattern of addiction? You know, even in alcoholism, I'm an everyday bourbon drinker. But I've worked with alcoholics who drink beer only, who drink wine only. I know people that are binge warriors. They just drink on the weekends. I've worked with alcoholics who are blackout drunks. I've worked with alcoholics who are blackout drunks who smoke crack cocaine in order to drink longer. They're not crackheads. They're not crack addicts, but they smoke crack in order to drink longer and not black out. So even within an addiction, behavior patterns can vary greatly. So how do we identify? How do we qualify? I always say, just because your boss thinks you have a drinking problem because you wore a lampshade on your head at the Christmas office party doesn't make you an alcoholic. Doesn't make you a lamp either. So how do we identify? And what I love about our big book is it gives very specific instructions on how we carry the message to those that suffer. So the message, as it goes on to say, that which can interest and hold addicted people must have depth and weight. Now, the depth and weight that we're looking for, the hair that we split is control. If any one of you could control what you love to do, would you be on this channel listening to this dickweed talk for 2 hours? I don't think so, right? You know, we'd all be doing what we love to do. But the depth and weight we have is once we do it, whether we're drinking, using, or acting out, we lose all control. That seems to be a very common denominator that adds depth and weight from one addict to another. It goes on to say, tell the newcomer enough about your drinking, using, or your acting out habits and symptoms and experiences, and encourage them to speak for themselves of themselves. You know, when I work with other addicts, and I might not understand their addiction, but over the years I've come to understand many of the addiction patterns out there, because one of the first questions I ask the newcomer is, tell me what it's like for you. Tell me what your spree looks like. And they teach me all about their addiction pattern and their lack of control. And that just helps me to be a better sponsor. And I love that approach. So I share some experiences with you about my drinking, my using, and how little control I have. I have no control. And you share with me about your addiction pattern. It goes on to say, tell them how baffled you were, how you finally learned that you were sick. Remember that point, that moment when you thought, I don't drink, I don't use, I don't act out like my friends do. There's something different about me. Y'all remember when that happened? I'm different from other people. I'm different from my wife who has a drink once in a blue moon. She has a drink. She gets a little nauseous, a little sleepy. She doesn't like it and she stops. I never got that experience when I drink alcohol. It's always like, wow, this is great. I want more and I want to be this way 24/7. And I realized I wasn't like other people and there was something wrong about me because I wasn't getting better. It was getting more and more dysfunctional as the years rolled on. It goes on to say, give them an account of the struggles of all the ways you tried to stop but failed, that you made to stop. What are all those different struggles that you've tried to stop, but failed at. And then the last thing it says, show the newcomer how the mental twist, how our mind lies to us, which leads us to that first drink, that first drug, or that first thought or act, which sets us out on that uncontrollable spree once we start it. It goes on to say that men and women, and this is a great passage, all addicts experience this pattern that I'm about to go over, whether they be drug addicts, alcoholics, or acting out addiction, they all experience the same pattern of behavior. Men and women drink, use, or act out essentially because they like the effect. You all like the effect, right? Now, if you're working with someone, they go, no, I don't like it anymore. What are they really saying? They don't like the consequences. But they love the effect produced by the drugs or the alcohol or the acting out behavior. And that's kind of the physical reaction. Even a gambler, I remember I went to a GA meeting and they thought they were different. But, you know, they had the same physiological need for more once they started placing bets, as I do when I do a drug or I have a drink of alcohol. That phenomenon of more, I want more. And if that's your experience, you can circle yes. The sensation is so elusive that while they admit is injurious, do you admit that your drinking, using, or acting out behavior is injurious? Not only to your life, but the lives around you. And if so, circle yes. And they can add after a time, differentiate the true from the false. In the margin, if you're writing in your workbook, write, I'm a liar. I'm a liar. I got this liar that lives in my head, and the liar loves the effect produced by alcohol and drugs, and it doesn't want to give up drinking or drugging under any situation. So what my liar has done, now our big book calls it the mental blank spot, that strange phenomenon that parallels our sound reasoning, but I call it the liar. My liar lives in my head, and it's built this research institute in my brain called Bullshit Inc. And it researches new ideas and new excuses and new reasons that even though my life has been burned to the ground, it's destroyed. This time when I have a drink or a drug, it's going to be okay. And here's the problem. The liar would always win the argument. Y'all relate to that liar that lives in our head convincing us that this time it'll be all right? And that's a problem for us because the liar always wins the argument. It goes on to say that to them, their addict life is the normal one. For me to be high or drunk is normal. Being straight is not normal for me. I don't like being straight. Normal for me is to be high or drunk. And that's I love that statement. It goes on to say that we're restless, irritable, discontented. I add to that list, bored, depressed, anxious. These are symptoms. Now, I don't know about you, but I don't like feeling that way. So my solution is to drink and use. See, drinking and drugging isn't my problem. It's my solution. Running out is a problem. But the drinking and drugging is my solution to that restless, irritable, discontented situation. And remember when we first started it? When we first started drinking or started using or acting out in the way that we did in the early days, it seemed like the answer, right? Like, yeah, this is the way I want to feel. And it seemed like the answer in the beginning, but as the years roll out and the illness progresses, it turns into something quite different. And it goes on to say that we're restless, irritable, discontented, bored, depressed, anxious, unless we can again experience the sense of ease and comfort. There's that physical reaction to it, which comes at once, which comes fast. That's why I do it, because I get my relief fast by taking a few drinks, a few drugs, or having those first few thoughts or acts, which I see other people doing with impunity, without consequence. Some people call them the normies or the non-addicts, the earth people. I call them muggles. That's a Harry Potter term for non-wizard. I call them muggles. My wife's a muggle. She's a JDD girl. Just don't drink, which is really the solution. But for some reason, I can't seem to implement it. I'm kind of like a dog that returns to its own vomit. You ever seen a dog eat something that makes it foully sick? It throws it up and then it eats the vomit only to throw it up again, only to eat the vomit. That's what I'm like as an untreated addict. I'm like a dog that continuously returns to the vomit, knowing it's going to make me sick, but my liar convinces me this time when I eat it, it's going to be okay. It goes on to say, after they succumb to the desire again, as so many do, and if that's been your experience, circle yes, the phenomenon of craving. See, it started off where I could take it or leave it, but as the illness rolled out, once I started, I couldn't predict what it was going to look like. I'd like to tell you, I'm just going to go to the pub, have a pint, couple shots of bourbon, and come home. And it might last just an evening, but it could go on all night. It could go on all day. It could go on for a week, a month, a year, longer. I have no idea once I start. And then eventually I emerge from the spree where I have no control over my consumption or my acting out. And I'm full of remorse and horror and hopelessness. I go, my God, I can't go on like this. I got to stop. And I make a firm resolution not to do it again. We've all done that, right? Never again. I'm not going to do it. And, you know, if you hooked up any addict when they come off a spree and make that resolution, I'm convinced if you hook them up to lie detector tests, it would register as truthful for all of us. But what happens? We know we can't live with the addiction anymore, but we don't know how to live without it. And then we're told, go to meetings, go to meetings, go to meetings. And a lot of meetings, they don't have the solution. They're what I call open, disgusting meetings, where you sit in a circle and it's problem, problem, problem. There's no cross-sharing or crosstalk, no opportunity to be helpful to those that are struggling. It's like group therapy without a therapist, like an incessant Oprah wine fest. And by the end of the meeting, I'm a psychological casualty where I didn't get any experience, any strength, any hope, and now I need a meeting to fix the meeting I was supposed to get that at. You ever been to a meeting like that? They're awful meetings. And one of two things happen. The person who's sitting there not getting any solution starts getting irritable, restless, discontented, bored, depressed. The liar comes out of remission, says, hey, we need our solution, and they succumb to the desire, and out they go. The other thing I see happening is they go into sobriety and they sit there and they get more restless, more irritable, discontented as the days and weeks go on, and they go insane and they end up taking their own lives. In 18 years and some 5,000 people I've worked with, 41 are dead. And out of the 41 that are dead, 9 took their own lives in sobriety. They hung themselves sober because they were completely insane. They could not, would not work this way of being, and they went nuts. And the suicide rates in 12 steps today, and this is in the Oxford Handbook to Psychiatry, is 80 times higher than normal society. 80 times. An untreated addict in the first 5 years of being sober is likely to take their own life. And that's a real problem in the rooms. It goes on to say that this pattern where we do spree, remorse, resolution, spree, remorse, resolution, that wheel of misfortune, pursuing our love of drinking, using, or acting out to the gates of insanity or death. Raise your hand if you know someone who's died from addiction, right? If you got it, it's a death sentence. And there's nothing we can do to stop this train wreck. It's repeated over and over and over again. If that's been your experience, circle yes. And unless this person can experience an entire psychic change and you go, what? What's that? They're alluding to a solution. I'm not quite sure what they mean by that, but they tell me this entire psychic change, there's very little hope of our recovery, meaning I'm going to relapse. Why? Because the liar always wins. So when I'm working with addicts and I'm trying to figure out how powerless are they, how powerless do they understand me to be, and how unmanageable our lives are, I use this analogy. It says addicts are like drowning men and women. And if we don't find some way of keeping our heads above water, we're going to drown. So we look for some kind of power to keep us afloat. And we notice there are logs, like a log floating on the surface. And I think, oh, I'll swim to the log. I'll hold on to the log. It'll keep my head above water. But as a power, it might keep my head above water a day, a week, a month, maybe a year or more. But at some point, the log fails me as a power and I slip and drown. The last sentence of this italicized paragraph, if you've got a highlighter, you can highlight it. Logs are best described as easier, softer ways, middle of the road solutions, and half measures. Now, if you turn to the top of page 5, I have what I call as a log and loser list. And it helps greatly to illustrate the powerlessness and the unmanageability. You can write across the top of your sheet, my rap sheet. For those of you who have criminal records, you know what I'm talking about. My rap sheet or my modus operandi, my MO, as an untreated addict. So the first part is my log list, admitting powerlessness. Now, the first log you'll notice is willpower. Isn't that the first log we all burn? We try to muster up the willpower, but it fails to hold us in check. Somehow we end up relapsing. And along with that log comes resolutions, oaths, promises, contracts, controlled drinking, using, or acting out. We've all tried those approaches. Now, I'm not going to go through it today because of our time factor, but at some point, go through this list and check off all the different strategies you've tried yet failed at. What I like about the log list is I've checked off everything on this log list with the exception of jail and incarceration, where I have not yet. And I doubt that would have sobered me up. But all the others I've checked off. And what that tells me is nothing secular, nothing human is going to keep me sober. I've exhausted all my opportunities. Now, when I share my logs with you and you share your logs with me, a couple things happen. One, depending on the number of logs you've checked off, it tells me as a sponsor just how powerless you are. And you, as the prospect or the newcomer, realize how powerless I am, because I've checked them all off too. And we begin to identify, hey, you're like me and I'm like you. You're just as powerless as me, yet you don't do it anymore. And that's very compelling to someone who wants to stop but can't stop. The other great thing about a log list is it's a summary of the first 43 pages of the big book. First 43 pages of the big book is step one. And there's no power in step one. We die on step one. So rather than reading 43 pages, we can surmise what's going on in step one in basically 3/4 of a page with a log and loser list. And that's very helpful. The other thing about a log list is it's universal. Whether you're a drug addict, an alcoholic, sex addict, food addict, cutter, hoarder, gambler, sex, love, whatever, all addicts burn the same logs. So I'm able to identify with any addict in using this approach. Any and all addictions go through the same logs. Now, unfortunately, it wasn't the log list that drove me into the rooms. It was the second part, the loser list. And the loser list, see, I love drinking and drugging so much that I'm willing to risk my life. And when I'm on that trajectory to the gates of insanity or death, I'm losing stuff. So I created this loser list, and I checked off everything on the loser list with the exception of my license. I never learned to drive, so I never lost a license. But I lost everything else. Now, like the log list, a loser list is universal. All addicts lose the same things. They're all on a trajectory to the gates of insanity or death. And again, what it tells me when we do a loser list as the sponsor, it tells me how close you are to the gates of insanity or death. And for the newcomer, it gives them that grave conclusion of how close they are to the gates of insanity or death. And that's to our advantage as sponsors, trying to encourage the newcomer to work these steps and find a way out of their predicament. And so I find that using this as a tool is very helpful as a sponsor because it lets me understand you. And in sharing it with you, you understand me. And we get to that all-important conclusion. Hey, I'm like you. You're like me. But you don't do it anymore. And I want what you have. And we're able to establish a really good relationship very early on in the 12-step recovery process with the newcomer by sitting down and just doing a log and loser list with one another. Next time you work with a prospect, try it out. You'll find it, I think you'll find it quite illuminating. So having done this work now, now I can get down to these all important diagnosing questions. If when you honestly want to, now I meet a lot of people that come to the rooms, they know they need to stop, but they don't necessarily want to stop. But those that cross that proverbial line to where they know they need to stop, but they want to stop, things start to take on a different kind of traction. And you find you cannot quit entirely. And now watch, this is how I use the log and loser list. Do you honestly want to stop drinking, using, or acting out? Ideally, that's a yes. And based on your log list, have you been able to stay stopped? And most people I work with circle, no, I can't stop. And if when drinking, using, or acting out, you have little control over the amount you take, then you're probably an addict. Do you exhibit little control when drinking, using, or acting out? And in most cases, that's a yes. If that be the case, you may be suffering from an illness which only a spiritual experience will conquer. Meaning I'm a loser without it. Because everything in my log list tells me I will drink, I will use, I will act out again. And for me to drink, use, or act out puts me on a trajectory to the gates of insanity or death, where eventually I'm going to lose my mind or my life. And that's a really awful conclusion to come to. So if you turn to the top of page 6, this is by no means a comprehensive picture of the true addict, since our behavior patterns do vary, but this description should identify you roughly. So once again, using the log and loser list as your basic tool, based on your log list and loser list, does this description of an addict describe you? In most cases, I get a very resounding, yeah, that's me. So now we can do that step one instruction. We learned that we needed to fully concede, there's that no half measures, to our innermost self, not to me. Who are we trying to defeat? The liar that lives within. We're trying to defeat the liar. To concede to our innermost selves that we were addicts. Do you fully concede that you're an addict? Yes or no? This is the first step in recovery. And the delusion, the lie that we're like other people or presently maybe has to be smashed. Now, with the phrase presently maybe, if you're working with your workbook, circle that and write, the liar creates doubt. This liar that lives in my head for the most part is in remission as a result of working the program. But every now and then the liar kind of peeks out and tries to convince me that I'm no longer an addict. That's the way the liar works, right? And the liar is always trying to create doubt. Oh, Cameron, are you really an addict? Come on, you've been sober 18 years, you know? Why don't we go have a bourbon and find out? Thankfully, I work a program where I can easily control that desire. So are you convinced you're an addict? Yes or no? Now, I got good news and bad news. First, the bad news. The bad news, we are without defense against the first drink, drug, or obsessive compulsive act. Why? Because the liar always wins the argument. So based on your log list, is that your experience? Yes or no? And the idea that somehow someday, the idea or the lie that somehow someday we'll be able to control and enjoy our drinking, our using, our acting out is the great obsession of every abnormal person, right? Every abnormal obsessive compulsive. And over any considerable period, we get worse, never better. It's progressive, and many pursue it to the gates of insanity or death. So based on your loser list, based on all the things you've lost and where you're at today, is that your experience? How close to the gates of insanity or death are you? A note to make at the end of this paragraph, when my mind and body heals, the liar returns and tells me it's okay to drink, use, or act out again. When my mind and body heals, the liar returns and tells me it's okay to drink, use, or act out again. This is the problem with the untreated addict. We may be sober, but if we don't have a program to live without it, our mind starts to heal, our body heals, and then the liar comes up and says, hey, we're good to go again. And off we go, because the liar wins the argument. That's the bad news. So you are now properly armed with the facts about yourself, which basically means, congratulations, you're going to die. Now, if you want to be a real jerk, just stop here. That's an awful place to start. Man, how many times have you been to a room where that's all we hear in the room? Problem, problem, problem. And it's like, oh my God, I'm going to die. That's not what the room's about. The room is where we express the experience, strength, and hope that there is an answer. There is a solution. And that's the good news. There is a solution. Now, if you are seriously addicted as we were, we believe there's no middle of the road solution. Are you convinced at this point, based on your log and loser list, that there's no middle of the road solution? And if so, circle yes. We are in a position where life is becoming impossible. If my life was not impossible, if the loser list had no depth and weight, I wouldn't be doing this presentation. I'd be doing cocaine and drinking bourbon right now. But I can't, because life becomes impossible when I do. So based on your loser list, is life becoming impossible? Yes or no? And if we passed into a region from which there is no return through human aid. Now, that's a pretty intense statement. So based on your log list, are you beyond human aid? I checked off all my logs. I was out of options. I couldn't think of anything human or secular that was going to sober me up. So I come down to two alternatives. One's to go on to the bitter end. Oh, God, just kill me now. Blotting out the consciousness of my intolerable situation. Or to accept spiritual help. And this we did because we honestly wanted to and were willing to make the effort. Are you now ready to accept spiritual help? Are you willing to make the effort? Yes or no? And if you got a good log and loser list, chances are that's going to be a yes. And strange as it may seem to those who do not understand, the muggles, the normies, who had so many problems they despaired of ever solving them, suddenly, quickly, fast, find themselves, and I love this line, easily control our desire to drink, use, or act out. That's the key. Because every now and then I get a desire, but I can easily control it, whereas untreated, it would turn into an obsession, and I would succumb to the desire. But I easily control my desire to drink or use. In fact, for most of the time, there's no desire whatsoever. And the only effort necessary is that we be required to follow a few simple rules to follow the recipe. If you turn to page 31 of your workbook, I want you to look at this diagram here, the Wheel of Misfortune. So if you look at this model where we come off the spree, we're full of remorse, and then we want to quit. But what do? When we're in the Wheel of Misfortune, we grab a log, the mental blank spot hits, the liar wins the argument, and I put that first drink, drug, or thought or act into play, and that puts me on another spree. And round and round and round I go, pursuing my love of drinking, using, or acting out to the gates of insanity or death. This is what we call the world of self, the world of no power. Based on this model, can you quit? And the awful conclusion is, no, I'm going to keep going around and around till I die or go crazy. We call it the Wheel of Misfortune, the bad news. Now, ideally, where we're at today is what we call this proverbial bottom. Some people call it the turning point. Some people call it the jumping off place. And this is where I know I can't take another lap around the Wheel of Misfortune, but I have no idea how to live without it. But we meet people in the rooms who have found a way out. So we get a sponsor or a guide or a sharing partner or spiritual advisor who can show us how to work the program. And we climb out of the hole. Now, climbing out of the hole, I have a note here, power is uphill all the way. A lot of addicts don't recover because they're lazy. It takes energy to climb out of the hole. But the hole we're climbing out to and the world that we're moving to and what we're going to show you over the next few hours is this world of spirit, this world of power where we have recovery, our three legacies, our 12-step program, our fellowship, the unity of our program with the 12 traditions, and the service structure of our program where we get involved in service at the group level, the area level, the world level. And this is the world where we experience God, or what people call a spiritual experience, spiritual awakening, psychic change, fourth dimension, God consciousness. And this is the good news. This is what we are seeking, power, the power to easily control our desire to drink, use, or act out. Now, to get there, we realize that there are certain essentials that need to be in place.